Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The CMU Podcast, in association with 7 Digital.
This week, New Order, Web Blocks, Elastic Artists, and the sound of 2016. I'm Andy Maltz, editor of CMU. I have with me Chris Cook, the business editor of CMU. And Chris is now going to say something as a sort of intro to this, because I haven't written down anything to talk about in our notes. I can't think of anything.
We're recording this edition of CMU Podcast in a different studio. Same building, different studio. It's slightly more intimate.
Weirdly, I can see our room through the window. It's unnerving.
You know when bands say they're playing an intimate venue and that basically means small? This is an intimate edition of the CMU Podcast. I think you'll feel more intimacy in the conversation on this edition just because of the surroundings. We've also shirked headphones for this edition for technical reasons we won't go into.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It is feeling a bit odd, actually, even though it was me who said, why the hell do we wear headphones? We really don't need to wear headphones. We never did back in the olden days. Oh, we're not allowed to talk about the old podcast.
We've already broken that rule.
Sorry. When we used to do it on a sofa in our little sweaty meeting room on Shoreditch High Street. We never had headphones then. So we don't need headphones now. This is fine, even though I do agree it's feeling a little bit odd.
Yeah, I'm going to put mine back on.
I'm sure it will work great. We need to do this podcast quicker than normal for two reasons. One, our podcast's been creeping, hasn't it? Every week it's like 2 minutes longer than the previous week.
Yeah.
So last week I think it was about 4.5 hours. So we need to get punchier, more concise. Also, there are two music industry parties in Shoreditch that we need to put in, at least show up and show that we're willing. And you've got 8:30 train to catch.
Yeah.
So we've got to squeeze in a podcast. We need to go and say hello to the guys at Believe Digital, who are having a little party, who had a great, very interesting, they did a sort of conference thing this afternoon, and they had a very interesting session on YouTube. I'm now an expert on YouTube Red and the YouTube Music app. It's a shame that we're not talking about that on this edition of the podcast, because
yeah,
I know everything you need to know about those two services, and they are having a bit of a party. And then the Music Managers Forum are also having their Christmas party, fortunately, just around the corner. So we need to go and say hello to both of those groups of people. And you catch your 8:30 train.
Yeah, so
and that's 8:30 from Stratford, not from Shoreditch.
Yeah, so I think we're going to do 20 minutes each. And then, well, you can stay. We don't need to be sorting out this admin right now.
Given that we need to get this podcast done.
Oh, and also, this will all have happened
By the time this podcast goes out, I will be on my way to Brighton to go and talk to the students of BIM, which is the Brighton Institute. I think they, did they still call it that? It was the Brighton Institute of Modern Music or something. I probably should have looked that up before I started talking about them.
But now it's all over the place.
Well, they have so many now that I don't know if they still count the B as bright. They might have done a backwards like we did with CMU. The C didn't originally stand for complete. We backwards engineered it.
Yes, it did.
And so perhaps
we don't talk about the old days.
Perhaps, seemingly so. So perhaps the B now stands for, I don't know, the bloody innovative music something. Anyway, I'm going to
BIM.
As
I say, we don't talk about the... Oh, you want to tell them about BIM?
I'm going to BIM to talk about Dissecting the Digital Dollar, the excellent report written by me, which you can still download from cmuinsights.com/digitaldollar if you're looking for some Christmas reading. Download the PDF, and then on Christmas Day, after the Queen, when nothing else is happening, you know, read all about copyright law and music licensing. That's the perfect Christmas read. In fact, probably get a print copy and give it to your mum or your sister as a stocking filler.
Well, you could try. Print copies are very hard to come by. I haven't even got one.
No, which means you can't give one to your sisters as a stocking filler. Anyway!
Yeah, as I said, no talking about the old days. Let's talk about the New Order, which, even though that's a slightly dubious segue.
That's a very dubious segue. Also, because, I mean, it's sort of
the
new
band
New Order.
The band New Order.
Yeah.
The new New Order.
Although it is sort of about the old New Order.
Well, it's about the old New Order and the new New Order.
This is getting very complicated. Tell us what happened this week involving New Order. Their new album.
Yeah, it's called Music Complete.
And I thought if we were to do a special update about their album, we could have the Music Complete update.
Did you get that joke from the joke that I made in the story about their album. That
oh,
I
no,
wrote
did
in the
you?
CMU days.
I
yeah.
didn't even remember that. I thought about it when I saw the billboard poster for it, no, tube poster for it the other day. I didn't realise you'd made that gag in the CMU Daily. I must have missed it somehow.
Yes, I referred to the story as a music complete update.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about the new album. We're here to talk about...
Well, we are a bit.
Litigation.
Shall we just get on with...
Yeah.
Rather than referencing stuff we haven't talked about yet. New Order. The new Order are being sued by Peter Hook from the old New Order.
Hooky with a Y. I'm still very embarrassed about that. When I referred to... Obviously, his nickname is Hooky. And that's how I referred to him. I was being all matey and in the know. I spelt it with an IE. And of course, Peter Hook spells Hooky with a Y. And I should have known that for two reasons. A, I was actually quite a big fan of New Order back in the day, you know, when they were good. And I was an even bigger fan of the Mrs. Merton show. So I should know how to spell Hooky. So I apologise for that. But yeah, Peter Hook and the rest of New Order have had an acrimonious relationship for a number of years now. It all began, didn't it, back in about 2007 when Peter Hook made the announcement, that's it, New Order have split up. And then the rest of New Order were like, have we? That's the first we know about it. And basically ever since then, the relationship between Peter Hook and the rest of New Order has been quite acrimonious, and all the more so since the rest of New Order decided in 2011 that they were going to start releasing new material and touring again under the name New Order, but without Peter Hook on bass.
Yes, so the other three original members of the band reunited in 2011 and started touring again. They released a new record, but I think it was a new record of stuff from older sessions. Music Complete is the first completely new material.
The new Order.
In quite a while. And in doing that, they decided to treat it as a new band, a separate entity from the New Order of old. So they set up a new company. Since Factory Records collapsed in 1992, there's been a New Order company that's managed all their finances. They set up a new company separate from that, and then the old New Order company licensed the name New Order to the new Order company, and so they treat it as a new band touring under that name and recording under that name. And Peter Hook reckons that he's losing out because of that.
Yes, so this presumably has been a long time coming, because this new company was set up in 2011. So the existing company, the new company is called New Order Limited. The old company had a really quirky name and I can't remember what it is. But the original company, well, Peter Hook has 25% stake in it. So I'm guessing, therefore, because there were four members of the band when they set it up, so I'm assuming it was split four ways. And so, yeah, all of the money and the royalties and the blah, blah, blah for New Order went through that business. Then they set up New Order Limited, as I say, back in... pretty much when the band sort of reformed in 2011. So this has been brewing for a number of years. And they are paying Peter Hook a royalty. So obviously, all of the existing recordings and the existing songs that were created in the original incarnation of New Order are nothing to do with this. And Peter Hook will still be getting his royalties through PRS and from the label and from his publisher in exactly the same way he would. The point is, it's sort of the fact that the new Order continue to use the name and generate revenue with the New Order name, both through the live activity and through the albums. And they put Peter Hook on a sort of a royalty for the use of the name. And ultimately, it is... Well, in the lawsuit, Peter Hook is objecting to lots of things about the way this was all set up, but I think it all boils down ultimately to a what should Hookie's cut be. And I think the figures that were doing the round is he's on something like a 1.5% royalty and he wants something like a 10.5% royalty.
He reckons he's lost at least 2.3 million since 2011, since they set this all up, which seems like a lot of money. New Order, the new Order, the current New Order... seemed quite dubious about this. They put out a statement through the NME saying, we're very disappointed that this is how Peter has decided to proceed. And of course, he's still receiving his royalties through the music that he created with the band. That's, you know, that's not been touched. This company just relates to the current lineup of the band. Nothing to do with him. He's not worked on any of the music. So it's a separate thing. It's our thing.
And the band were keen to clarify that, weren't they? Because I think they felt that the way it had been reported when it first became news... and the fact that there was this 1.5, whatever it was, figure doing the rounds, was the suggestion that that is all Peter Hook is getting from any of the New Order catalogue or repertoire or anything. And they were sort of keen saying, no. 2007 line was drawn. He's still getting the cuts on all of that music when it's played on the radio or when CDs are sold, etc., etc., as he always would have done. It's just on the new stuff we're paying him a nominal sum because we are using a brand name of which he was part of the legacy. And so remind us why this is news this week, because this has been clearly rumbling for a long time. It went legal a while ago, but it became to everyone's attention this week because something was happening in the High Court.
Yeah, there's news this week because the High Court ruled that this can go to a full trial because a new order, the new order, had tried to get it thrown out of court, saying that basically he was just acting out of spite and this is a ridiculous lawsuit and shouldn't be allowed to go forward. But a judge disagreed and said, no, this can go to a full trial because I think the judge, like us, went, this sounds like a really fun, really acrimonious trial that will just make great headlines. And let's just let it run forward.
You do sense the actual real feud is Peter Huck and Bernard Sumner, don't you? And in terms of this allegation that this is just being pursued out of spite, the idea is, they've just had this feud for a number of years now, and this is just him, A, causing problems, B, going after money, and C, also, they've got this new album out, they're doing lots of new work, and they will be touring and all of that, and it's just to throw a spanner in the works at the worst possible time, because they're in full-on activity mode, and so he's just doing this to be spiteful. But the judge didn't accept that argument, and the judge said, well, perhaps he was doing it for entertainment value. I think what he
I'm
said
not sure
was,
judges are allowed to do that.
There is obviously he's not ruling one way or the other on whether or not the percentage that Peter Huck is getting is fair, whether there was anything untoward about the way they set up this new company and the licensing deal that they agreed to. But what he was saying was there is a sufficient issue here that this should get a proper hearing. I'm not just going to throw it out on a quick pre-trial conversation about whether or not Peter Huck is behaving in a bad way here. The line we always wheel out at this time is now wheeled out, which is, I think they'll probably settle out of court. However, I suppose the feud does seem to be of such a level that both sides might see it through. And if it did go to court, I mean, I think it would be quite entertaining, certainly if the band members had to testify.
And even if it doesn't go to court, I mean, this feud has been going on, as you say, for a long time. Peter Huck has, at various points in the past, said some very contentious things.
Wasn't the most
nasty things about
it? There was the Joy Division book, and they set up a Twitter feed to promote the book, and then he was really pissed off because he said he hadn't been consulted. Was that not the last sort of public spat?
Yes. I mean, because actually the most recent thing where he was happy was the old New Order company signed a new publishing deal with Universal, and I think the rest of the band didn't seem to have put out a statement. He did put out a statement saying, this is great, and I've been hoping to do this deal for years. This is brilliant.
No,
but otherwise, normally when he's talking about New Order, he's saying, fuck those guys.
And in some ways, that was impressive on clearly, I think it's Universal Publishing that they announced a deal with. So clearly, there is a business partner in play here who is on good terms with both sides of the equation. But the band members themselves. And of course, Peter Huck continues to perform. And he has been performing. I mean, obviously, he has new material as well. But he does perform, I think, both New Order and Joy Division work.
Yeah.
Mrs. Merton days.
No, Peter Huck and the Light. And that's the weird thing is sometimes he'll come out and say, it's disgraceful that New Order are performing Joy Division songs. So you've toured playing full Joy Division albums. That's quite an odd thing to say. But, he's just that angry that any chance to put the boot in, he does seem to take it. And so even if they settle out of court, I'm sure, unless there's some agreement as part of the settlement that they don't talk about it, I think there will be some more angry statements to come.
So it remains to be seen whether or not we get a proper court case. If not, Andy Malt is still hanging on for some bitchy remarks, whether it's through representatives, interviews or on the social networks. It remains to be seen how this turns out. But one to watch in 2016 as this litigation goes through the motions.
So tips for 2016.
Yeah.
Legal tips for 2016.
Well, I was thinking of doing a blog post or something. I don't know, go through CMU or my personal blog. Everyone's doing both their top 10 albums of the year or their top 10 artists with tipping. We're going to talk more about that later. So I have no opinion on that, but I might do the top 10 legal battles and litigation to come. So perhaps that's something that I could contribute to that. So perhaps that's something that I'll do and let you know on the last podcast of the year where to find it.
Web blocking now. Good old web blocking. Two things have happened with web blocking this week.
They have, in both directions.
Yes.
Two contradictory developments. Quick recap on web blocking. Have we talked about web blocking recently on the podcast?
Probably.
So web blocking is where there is a mechanic in copyright law where a rights owner, like a record company, usually in this country the BPI, the record label's trade body, can go to court and they can say, you see this website here? It's a copyright infringing website. It exists to either directly infringe or to help others and encourage others to infringe. It's a bad website. It's like the Pirate Bay or Kick-Ass Torrents or one of those sites. But for one of a number of reasons, we can't actually target the site directly, either because we've no idea who runs the site. Quite a lot of sites these days. The early days of Pirate Bay were great because we knew who ran it, and Peter Sund was incredibly vocal and was sort of the front man of the operation. Most piracy operations these days, since those four guys ended up in jail, wisely are anonymous. We don't know who runs these sites. And so we can't go after the people who run these piracy sites because we don't know who they are. Or even if we do know who they are, they're normally based in an unfriendly jurisdiction. They're somewhere in Russia or elsewhere in the world where the UK courts for certain, or the German courts or the Swedish courts, as we're talking about this week, can't directly force those websites out of business. So the rights owners say, you, the judge, are agreeing with us that this is a copyright infringing website. They are liable for infringement. Action should be taken, but we can't take any action directly. So therefore, we should get a web block injunction, which basically forces usually internet service providers to block their customers from accessing the site. So if you go to thepiratebay.org or .se, whatever their main domain is
these
days.
Whatever it currently is. I think it went back to org.
Then you will see a screen, the one that everyone always uses. All media must have a Virgin Media internet account, because whenever somebody, we do it, but other people too, whenever anybody's illustrating this story, they always illustrate it with a screen grab of the Virgin Media message. So all journalists must be on a Virgin Media account that just says, you can't access this website, it's evil, or some words to that effect, and you can't use it. What the official notice from your ISP doesn't say, but most people have worked out, is, but if you go and do a Google search for this website, there'll be some way of circumventing the block, and you can still find the Pirate Bay if you want to. So yes. the web blocks are not perfect, but record companies and TV companies and movie studios still say, well, A, some people might not be clever enough to circumvent the blocks, or they might not be bothered, or even if they do, at least it reinforces to those people what you are doing is illegal. Okay, yeah. You are accessing illegal content. Because sometimes people don't really know the difference between...
And as more legitimate sites pop up, which there are a good number of legitimate ways to access music and video content.
Yeah, slightly less than 2 months ago.
Yeah, but you know, but
when from.
The problem years ago when file sharing was a bigger issue was that the file sharing sites were better and more convenient than the legal offerings from the music industry. So that was obviously a problem. Whereas now there are so many good, legitimate ways of getting music that actually the more you make illegal sites just annoying to access, if you have to do something to circumvent them every time you want to go there, then it makes the legal sites even more attractive.
Which is why the music industry and the other entertainment industries are fans of web blocks. And whether or not these web block injunctions are available very much varies from country to country based on the local copyright law. So in some countries, so Australia most recently, copyright law has actually been rewritten to insert a line that says, if there's a website that is clearly infringing, but you can't shut it down because you don't know who runs it or it's based in another country, well, the courts can do these web block injunctions. Or in some countries, including here in the UK, it wasn't a specific change to copyright law. It was just it was the movie industry who went, remember the Newsbin site, went to court in the UK and said, this is copyright infringing. Actually, a case a year ago, 2 years ago, we all agreed this was a copyright infringing site. We can't find these guys. We can't shut them down. Actually, I think Newsbin was in the UK, and then after they got done in
it
court,
shifted.
They moved location. They said, well, we need a system to stop that from happening. And the judge said, okay, here's an injunction. We'll force that. It's the big six ISPs to block access. The ISPs initially, ISPs don't like being brought in as the piracy police. So ISPs initially were a bit resistant. But actually, once the judge had passed that first injunction and it had all been set, precedent now was these injunctions are available. And in the UK, for certain, the ISPs don't blink now. Well, these injunctions, there are numerous of these injunctions in place. New ones are being passed all the time. And the ISPs in the UK are just like, all right, then fair enough. And we'll block those sites. And actually, I went to an event, a Music 4.5 event earlier this year, where they had a representative from Telefonica, from an ISP, bigging up this saying, this is the one anti-piracy tactic that is worth pursuing. So not from ISPs being down on this, you actually had an ISP advocating it and saying, well, of all the piracy things you have come up with, Mr. Music Industry, this is the one that seems more viable. However, there are still plenty of countries where you cannot get web block injunctions and the law is being tested. And we saw the test in both Germany and Sweden this week. And in Germany, the conclusion was, web blocks are available under current copyright law. The Swedish courts were less convinced by the argument.
Yeah, so Gamer, who are the publishing rights agency, collecting society for Germany, who are generally quite litigious and down on everything.
Well, they're down on most legitimate services.
The one country where you can't watch music videos on YouTube because Gamer don't like it. So they went to court over this site, 3DL.am, which actually is already defunct, but really they were carrying on with the case to get the idea of weblogs tested in
and
court.
It was, yeah, Deutsche Telekom, obviously the big telco and therefore ISP in Germany, was the ISP that they were trying to force to block it. And Deutsche Telekom, as ISPs do when weblogs are new, were saying it's not our job, not our job, not our job. So actually the case was Gamer versus Deutsche Telekom.
Yes, and although it's sort of the full judgment sort of looked like Gamer lost, really, they got the one thing they actually wanted out of it. So the judge said, well, this site's already offline, so this is pointless. But yes, in theory, you could get web blocks. However, in this case, Gamer hadn't done enough to identify who was running the site.
Which I suppose is interesting in that you really sense that what the German court, and this was Supreme Court, so this is top level, what the German court was saying was, okay, web blocks are possible under German law, but as an absolute last resort.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're yet to see the full judgment, which will presumably outline what you need to do before it is considered last resort and web block. Whereas here in the UK, you don't get that sense. I mean, the minute you can prove, you go there and you say, oh, kick-ass torrents, it clearly exists primarily to enable and encourage people to infringe. And the judge is like, yeah, block it. Whereas in Germany, the impression we're getting from this ruling is you'd have to go and say, it's clearly infringing, and we tried to do this, we tried to find these. Hiring a private detective was one of the things. We did some research, we tried to work out where it is, and we tried all of this, and we still can't take direct action against this site, so we need a web block. And so, yeah, you're right. Although the German judge was saying web blocks are possible under German law, he was saying, actually, in this case, you're not getting a block. A, there's nothing to block.
Even if the site was still up, you wouldn't be getting a block.
And also, at the same time, there was a separate case being pursued by the major record companies, and same thing, where the judge said, well, even though I've just said that these blocks are in theory possible, you have not done enough to directly target this site before we go the web block route. So, as you say, Gamer still welcomed this, sort of saw this as a victory because it set the precedent in German law that web blocks are available, and then they need to now review the full judgment from the court to see what it is they would have to do in order to get web blocks. And usually once the precedent has been set in any one country, you then get a flurry of applications to court and all the usual suspects get blocked by the big ISPs unless you're willing to circumvent them, which we know a lot of people are. So it may well be that next year we see a lot of those going through the German courts, or a lot of private detectives being hired to do what is required in order to get the last resort and then going through. Whereas in Sweden, I mean, this was a lower court. It wasn't Supreme Court level, so there's still appeals to run.
The district court in Stockholm.
But no web blocks.
No, this court ruled. So this was attempts to get... Oh, no. I've got to try and say this ISP's name now.
Go on. I'm looking forward to this.
Bredbandsbolaget.
Yeah. They're a Telenor subsidiary, if that's easier.
So this Telenor subsidiary was being taken to court to try to get a web block in place on the Pirate Bay, the good old Pirate Bay, which despite... This was the exact same court where the four founders of the Pirate Bay were convicted.
Yeah, and did their jail time eventually.
Did their jail time. Pirate Bay still very much exists, now run by different people.
Anonymous, usually.
Anonymous people.
Yeah.
So the Pirate Bay was back in this court for a different thing, so trying to get this web block, and the court said, no, this, I don't think you should have web blocks on this.
And this was the usual, I mean, the ISP were objecting to the idea that they should have to block, and so it was like, well, do ISPs have a responsibility to police the internet? And the judgment was basically, no, that it's not up to the ISPs to have to take this action, you need to go and sue the people directly. I suppose, in Sweden, the Pirate Bay is, I mean, quite where the servers are these days, even if there are servers, a lot of it's in the cloud, isn't it? But you could say in Sweden, well, the Pirate Bay ultimately is based in Sweden, so you can take direct action against them in a way that the UK courts can't. That said, as you say, we had this judgment 4 years ago now, which was both a criminal and a civil case. So they were found to be criminally guilty of copyright infringement. They were also liable for huge damages. And yet, although the jail time was eventually served, no damages were ever paid, and the site is still running. So I think the music industry could say, well, it's all very well, you saying we should go after them directly. We did that 4 years ago in this court and we won, and yet actually the site's still running, we never got any damages, what are we to do? So relatively low court, this will almost certainly go all the way up to Supreme Court in Sweden, and they will continue to fight, and I think eventually they will get it. Although these are all in the European Union, when this was discussed at European Union level, the European courts were very much, well, web blocks are entirely within European copyright law, but it's for states to decide. So there is no precedent set because the UK are doing it, because Germany have said it's possible. That isn't a compelling argument in Sweden itself. So the argument does have to be had under Swedish law.
Yeah, and one of the things the judge said in this case was that the ISP itself could not be considered responsible for its users infringing copyright, and therefore that was partly why the web block was not granted.
Although that brings you into safe harbours, which we're definitely not going to talk about right here, right now.
We did enough of that last week.
But it is that, and safe harbours does stem from European law. So I suppose if we get clarification on safe harbours at European level, perhaps that will have an impact. Who knows? But anyway, the news this week in web blocks. Germany, yes. Sweden, no. Time now for the CMU-approved slot of the CMU podcast. Are you ready to approve, Andy Malt?
Oh, I'm ready.
Tell us why you are approving Go Dark.
Go Dark is a project from Dose One of Cloud Dead and numerous other projects, this just being yet another one on his list, and a singer from Oakland called Ashley Gallegos. They've just released a new EP as their second EP. They released one last year. This one is called Bright Wild. And it's kind of, they improvise with like electronic tracks and vocals and stuff, and then basically go back and finesse it and work it into kind of single tracks.
Yeah, so it's still quite improv-y.
Yeah.
And then they do then sort of fix the errors.
However, it is then still quite, meandering sounds like a negative term, but it's quite free-flowing was the term I used in the actual article, and quite hard to predict. But it's very engaging and interesting music. It sort of sometimes it veers almost into like pop music, and then it will drift into sort of the more like abstract hip hop that Dose One is particularly known for. It also comes with a video game attached. If you want the downloads, you have to play and win this video game to get all of them.
Which you did win.
I won two.
What sort of game is it?
Well, I don't know.
You just kept clicking, and something happened.
Well, I was about to give up, and then something happened.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, maybe I'll try that again. But it's a very confusing game. I'm still not exactly sure what I was doing. But I won two tracks.
Well done. And there's a video that explains, well, it doesn't explain how the game works.
There's a video. The game was kind of made sort of in a similar vein to how they make music. It was kind of, it was built in 48 hours with these game developers where they were sort of just improvising as they go. And then this video, it sort of explains the process of doing that. So that's an interesting thing to watch. That's also linked to in the article, so you can go and find it.
Go and check out. La Fonda, is that how we're saying this?
La Fonda.
La Fonda. La Fonda.
Well, it's La Fonda in Napoleon Dynamite, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. La Fonda is someone who we approved, or Ali approved, about a year and a half ago in CMU.
But still worth approving.
Still worth approving. La Fonda is back now with about to release a new EP early next year. Has just signed to Warp and released the title track Tan from this EP. On this one, she's working with co-producers Nick Weiss and Tamer Fari. Also got ADR and Elvis 1990 as executive producers. So a lot of hands in the pie. But it's still...
Hands in the pie? Big pie.
Big pie, yeah. And like people just shoving their whole hands in rather than fingers like you would normally do. Yeah. Anyway, let's not get into nonsense about stuff.
Is that all you have to say?
No! You have finished. Throw me right off course now.
I thought you'd sort of reached some sort of climax there. Tell us more.
Well, it's sort of, I guess, experimental.
It's a weird electronic track tempered by vocals.
What? Anyway, it's sort of experimental electronic music. It's a little bit more fine-tuned than her earlier work. And then it's got this very nice vocal that sort of tempers the weirdness of the track behind it.
Now I want a pie.
It's all have a pie. You can't have a pie. It's had hands in it.
I've got mince pies back at the office left from the CMU Insights seminar. We had mince pies for the CMU Insights final seminar of the year. And we didn't finish eating them all, so I could have brought them for the podcast. Next week, we'll have stale mince pie. Los Porcos.
Los Porcos, I'm sure, is not how they say it. But, hey, it's Portuguese for the pigs, if you're interested. Anyway, they're ex-Woo Life, members of Femi, Ménage à Trois, and Francis Lung. this is a project I think they started about 2 years ago and then got a little bit of attention and then sort of didn't really do anything else with it. They started kind of earlier this year, released the odd track here and there, remix, and they've played a few shows, and now they've released this new EP, which I think might be a precursor to an album, but I might just be making that up. I'm sure I saw mention of an album somewhere.
There'll be an LP in my travels. Some point.
And it's sort of this, I mean, they don't take themselves too seriously, but still the music is very good. It's sort of a laid back, kind of quite infectious funk, disco pig house, I think they refer to it as.
That's their own description.
Yeah.
When you put that in the approved, I had to check whether or not you were, because you didn't actually put it in quotes. And so I wanted to know,
I call it disco pig house?
Well, that was what I was wondering. Is this is how they self-describe, or for some reason, are you suddenly describing things as being pig disco?
I should start. There was a time when I used to make up genres thing. Maybe I'll start doing it again.
Finally, Get Inuit.
Get Inuit, who are a band from Kent. And they have released a new EP called Luge Lessons that actually came out a couple of months ago on the marvellous Alcapop Records. And they've just released a new video for one of their tracks called Procrastinator, which I think is probably the standout track on that EP. It's a very punchy 2.5 minute guitar pop song, very much worth checking out. And if you want to see them live also, they're playing the Alcapop Records Christmas party on the 19th of December.
CompleteMusicUpdate.com/approved is where you can read more about all of these and other, if you go back past weeks. Or maybe you're listening to this podcast next week and there'll be next week's approves already appearing. Anyway, go to the website and read more.
Live business now. Elastic Artists, a booking agency based in London, admitted last week, in fact, that it was having financial difficulties after some of its artists, it mainly represents electronic and urban acts, and some of them started pointing out that they hadn't been paid.
Yeah, so, I mean, there have been rumours around Elastic Artists for a number of months now. Having said that, it has traditionally been quite a popular agency, and I think certainly a lot of the bookers and promoters you talk to, who obviously deal with the agency in order to get access to the artist and to book the artist, like the agency, they like the agents there. But rumours started to spread that the company was having problems, and then one artist in particular, Alexander Nutt, started tweeting saying, basically, where's my money? I'm not being paid.
And I think it possibly started like that. Occasionally they'd be slow to pay, and then I think it's just got to the point where they're not paying.
And a number of artists now have come out, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, saying not only are they, so they've not been paid, I think it's like about a month now, that, I mean, I don't know if it's all artists, one of the problems is the agency itself is saying very little, which is why we don't quite know what's going on. We don't quite know, is this all artists? Is it some artists? Is it a month? Is it 2 months? Is it 3 months? What does it mean for the future of the company? They are saying very little, and I suppose why should they say anything to us? But you sense they're also saying very little to their artists. And there was one. Yeah. We first got confirmation because after it started to go live and people were chatting on the social networks, a memo did go out, I assume to all clients. We know this because Resident Advisor got a copy and basically published it.
Yeah.
And that's where it was financial difficulties was the term they used.
I said, we are exploring options to restore the company's liquidity and to transfer the ownership of the business to a new team. Sort of seems like restoring liquidity sort of sounds like liquidizing, selling it to someone else.
Yes, so most people seem to think that the company is heading into administration.
Their website has been down for a number of days now.
Yes.
Although that may or may not be related to another part of this story.
Yes, but the talk is that the agency is going to administration. And of course, once the company's in administration, then the accountants come in, the incredibly expensive accountants come in, and we'll initially see, can they rescue the company by restructuring or by borrowing some money? If not, can they sell the company? Which I suppose would be selling it either to another agency or maybe to some of the existing directors, or if not, then you go into liquidation and they would wind it up. And usually in that scenario, the accountants get paid, the tax man gets paid. Proper PAYE employees are also prioritised in that list. The artists being owed money will be down the bottom of the list and could well be unlikely to see any of that money. And I suppose, you know, for a lot of artists these days, that live money coming in through your agents is your biggest revenue stream, and particularly in, you know, electronic and urban music, where you'll be having DJ bookings as well as live bookings. So quite a few people, both artists affected by this, and then other people, promoters. A couple of promoters are online saying, well, I definitely paid the agency.
Yeah.
And sort of saying, you know, this will be a real gap in income just before Christmas. So we are waiting to hear, you know, whether or not the administrators are in and what it means for the future company. The thing about an agency is, once the agency starts to have problems, each agent has a roster. And what usually happens when it comes to this side of the business is the roster almost belongs to the agent rather than the company. So if agents move from one agency to another, they usually take a big chunk, if not all of their clients, with them. And so, and management companies are the same. And what it means is, if a booking agency or a management company hits the wall, usually all the agents, all the managers pretty much immediately jump ship. And we've already heard that a couple of agencies who were part of Elastic have already reaffiliated with other agencies that specialise in dance music and urban. They take their rosters with them, and once all your agents have gone with their rosters, well, what are you left with? So in terms of trying to sell the business to somebody else, I mean, unless some of the directors who are themselves agents are attractive and could be bought, but then even that, you just hire them. So it's hard to see that once this company goes into administration, who you would sell it to. So the company could well be wound down, although all of this is speculation at the moment, because the company, beyond admitting these financial difficulties and saying they were sort of reviewing what's going to happen, beyond that, we don't officially know what's going on, although we do unofficially know a lot of stuff. Because you mentioned the website's been down. The website's been down now for a few days. However, their social media, which had mentioned nothing about any of this, even when some of their artists started tweeting about this, the official social channels of Elastic Artists said nothing until about 3 days ago, and suddenly the social media got very lively.
Got very lively because one of the company's acts, Levels, MC Collective from Manchester, got the logins for all of those social media accounts.
We think because one of the collective had worked at Elastic Agencies, he isn't anymore, but presumably that is how he had the logins and passwords.
No one had thought to change the passwords.
Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, all free.
Yes, and they they took them over and began posting updates vigorously. One of them is that there was a video that they put online, which was supposedly showing them having kidnapped the creative director of the company and
demanding
basically
their money
threatening
back
to torture him unless they got paid, which we think was a hoax.
It was like a 15-second video, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there were three other videos on Instagram, but there was the main one on YouTube that got taken down.
It did, and so, yeah, so that was
for
on
being threatening.
Exactly, yeah. So that
and
was
this is apparently, there's one, actually the one statement that the company put out, I think this might have been Resident Advisor again, spoke to one of the directors of the company who said that he couldn't comment any further, but there was a police investigation into this video. Presumably, we're pretty sure it's a hoax. However, it is still a threatening video. So that would be why the police would get involved in that.
That might also, I mean, I should have looked this up. I'm not quite sure what the legalities would be of basically taking over somebody's social networks and then stealing them. So that there may well be a case to answer that. I do not know. But so for about 48 hours, they were in control of Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. When I last checked, Facebook, all of the stuff that they had been posting had been taken down. Instagram, as far as I can see, everything had been taken down. On Twitter, the retweets, because they were basically retweeting everybody who'd been dissing the agency and all the other artists, and those were still on the Twitter account. So I don't know if that means they are still to wrestle back control of the Twitter account. So, yeah, but it was, well, is fun the right word? I mean, the fact that the agency is having these financial problems is a real shame. I mean, a lot of artists and indeed the people who work there, and the consensus was that most of the people who worked there, it was a shock to them when this confirmation went out. All they knew was accounts had stopped answering the phone, and it was quite shocking. So, you know, a lot of people will be hit by this, and as I say, it was a popular agency with bookers and promoters, so it'll be really sad if the result of this is that the agency does not come through. Although for those 48 hours a sort of it was quite amusing watching what these guys were posting on behalf of their one would assume very much X booking agency.
Yeah, so that's a story that's very much still emerging. I think we'll probably hear more of that in the coming weeks and months. But for now, those are the things we know.
Those are what we know. And I suppose, you know, another quick aside, I mean, another development this week is that SFX, the EDM powerhouse, as I always call it, have called in the bankers to review their debts. That was a bit of SFX news this week. SFX, the big EDM company, Elastic Artists, one of the big EDM agencies. You sort of sense that that EDM bubble, which has been sort of waiting to burst for a while now, is now bursting. And the companies that really sort of built and grew on the back of all the hype of on dance music, particularly in the US, that is sort of coming into a staggering halt.
I mean, SFX in particular.
In particular.
So massive growth in a very short space of time.
So we will see what happens with both of that in the next few weeks.
Let's just take a quick moment to look through a few of the stories we didn't have time to fully discuss this week. Adele, I think we discussed enough last week, but tickets for those shows we mentioned in the UK went on sale this week, on the pre-sale, and there was lots of talk of how they managed to fend off ticket touts.
Yes.
They didn't completely fend them off. Some tickets still ended up on secondary sites, but it was less than 2%, apparently.
Yeah, with pre-orders, you had to provide quite, you know, so your identity, your name, your email address in order to be qualified for the pre-orders.
And they weeded out people they thought might, I mean, we don't know how they identified people they thought were probably touts, but apparently it was like 18,000 people they decided couldn't go through to the pre-sale. However, as the podcast goes live this week, I think, well, they'll have been on general sale, I think, since 9 a.m, so probably would have sold out already, at which point I think it would be harder to control the touts.
And they, I mean, the management were saying, we will very much be monitoring the secondary sites and deleting any touted tickets that we see. Although, as we discussed, was it 2 weeks ago? That's easier said than done, because generally speaking, although you do have to now publish a little bit more information about the ticket than you used to because of the Consumer Rights Act earlier this year, you can get away with not providing either the ticket number or the seat number. And without that information, it's nigh on impossible to go through and cancel touted tickets.
Yeah, the other little bit of news on that was that the pre-sale was run through Songkick and their ticketing system, which apparently struggled to cope
had a bit
with
of a
demand,
wobble.
Had a bit of a wobble, and some people were seeing other people's confirmation screens. So basically, you would select two tickets for Manchester, and when you got to the next screen, it would say, here are the four tickets for London that you chose.
With the name and address,
the name and address of the person who booked them. And, I mean, some people were claiming that they were seeing like full addresses, full credit card numbers of other people, which Songkick denied could have happened.
But I mean, and it would be odd because usually, beyond you typing in your credit card number, you would never see a full credit card number relayed back to you. So that does seem unlikely, although that was certainly what the BBC are reporting.
Yeah.
That's what some people were saying. So I suppose that could be, I mean, Billboard, obviously it's the media's interest to hype all of this up into a big disaster, but Billboard were definitely saying, oh, there were lots of frustrated fans saying that the pre-order system was clunky and it wasn't working. And I didn't do it. I didn't book tickets to see Adele. I don't really want to care about seeing Adele live. I know a lot of people do. So I have no personal experience of it. Although, if there is some bad feedback to this, and who knows, some of those 18,000 people who were not allowed through might have been genuine fans who are now pissed off. It would be, do you remember Radiohead tried to do some anti-touting stuff as well, and
yeah,
that had a bit of a backlash to it. So it will be another example of an artist trying to do the right thing, but then it's a challenge to do the right thing, and you might annoy some people in the process.
Which then might be something that the music industry could flag up to the government in their current review of secondary ticketing.
Who knows?
And then, you know, say, see, it's too hard. Help us out.
Anyway, as you said at the start of this section, we don't have time to talk about this on the podcast.
Yeah.
Tell us some other things we haven't got time
Martin
to talk
Garrix,
about.
Martin Garrix, he has settled with Spinning Records, though not his former management company. He sued his label and management company, which were founded by the same person, his manager, former manager. And basically, he left both in August and recently launched legal action, saying he wanted he wanted control of his music back, and he was saying that his manager gave him false and misleading information when he signed him.
He was very young
when he was 16, and basically, I mean, it's a kind of double dealing, I guess, when you're saying that, you know, the manager is signing someone to his own record label in his own interests, which would be Martin Garrix's claim. So he said he's now settled with the record label and has taken back control of his music and licensed the releases that the label put out back to them. However, the proceedings with the management company and his former manager carry on and may as yet go to court.
So partly resolved, some partly to come.
BBC Three's boss says that his channel is just reinventing itself by going online. It's not being downgraded.
Yeah, so the BBC Trust gave approval last week, I think, for the plan, which has obviously been on the agenda now for well over a year, 18 months, I think, to take BBC Three off Freeview, off Sky, off Virgin, and have it as an online on-demand channel only through the iPlayer. And BBC Trust said, yeah, you can do that. But immediately BBC Three was saying, oh, this is really exciting. We're the first online-only channel. There is the argument that BBC Three is aimed at young people. A lot of young people now don't sit down in front of the telly. They consume things predominantly through devices or online. So it is the channel to take online-only first, although the reason they're doing it is to save money. And as well as losing their slot on the conventional TV networks, they're also losing, you know, most of their programming budget. So even though they might have these super duper online channels, which their audience is what they want, there'll be a lot less programs to shunt through those channels with the money that they're going to have. Nevertheless, it's a relaunch. It's exciting.
Yeah,
it's
and on the plus side, the other BBC thing that's happening is happening this weekend. The BBC Music Awards.
Yeah,
which
the
are
BBC Nonsense
very,
Music Awards.
Very much worth having.
So, yeah. Stop spending money creating original programming for young viewers that connects the BBC with the future generation and ensures the corporation remains relevant.
Give Adele some awards.
Waste a load of money on a big unnecessary awards bash that nobody is interested in. So well done to the British Broadcasting Corporation this week. Although, Tom York has not likened the BBC to Nazis. So in that respect, they're doing quite well.
Yeah. Although, you know, if they put everything online and maybe... maybe that's where the future lies, because he reckons YouTube are like the Nazis.
So we're taking Tom slightly out of context here.
Only slightly.
But only slightly. So Tom York gave another interview about the internet, this time with who?
La Repubblica in Italy.
So you had to translate this interview.
Yes.
So anything we now say may be lost in translation, because Andy Malt's Italian isn't perfect by any means.
Better than yours.
I think there might have been a bit of Google translating going on. So
little bit, maybe.
So they were talking to him, as everybody always does with Tom York, about digital. Actually, Spotify was not really mentioned in this interview. It was YouTube. And he was basically saying, oh, they just swan around, taking all of our content and use it to make a lot of money and say, oh, it's not your content, it is your content. And then basically saying it was like the Nazis stealing art in the Second World War.
Yeah.
And indeed the Brits. He did them. He didn't just make it that the Germans, you know, nabbed a load of valuable creative art stuff during the war.
I think he possibly realised that comparing things to the Nazis is a tried and tested and generally makes it look like you've lost an argument. So he went, oh no, everyone did that. Loads of people stole art in the Second World War.
And it's happening now online. Google are the main enemy.
But you can read more about all of these stories by finding the show notes for this very podcast, which are at completemusicupdate.com. Hey, it's December. It's that time again when everyone starts publishing lists.
It is list season.
So albums of the year, artists of the year, all that stuff. But that's not what we're talking about, because that's all looking back to stuff that's happened already. We want to look forward and know what's going to happen next year, because God forbid it be a surprise.
Yes, so looking ahead lists have become very popular in recent years. So in, as well as the, as you say, artists and albums of the year, everyone now wants to do our ones to watch, buzzy bands, who's going to be big next year. And the trick with these lists, and I think all of the lists that we're about to talk to have done this, well, I suppose the Brit's Critics' Choice less so, but most of the lists that go around and all the other, the media do this, bloggers do this, digital services do this. The trick with a ones to watch list is to tip. Well, we reckon the record industry has about a 1 in 9 hit rate, don't we? For every 10 artists that are a record, the percentage of the major labels sign, one of them will be successful, certainly commercially successful. So if the industry has a 1 in 10 hit rate, well, if you tip 10 new artists, the chances are that one of them is going to be successful. And if you tip 20, two of them are going to be successful. And then next year you can say, aha, look at that, we tipped Sam Smith and he was huge. So we know what we're talking about. And let's not talk about these 27 people that we tip that you've never heard of again. So, lots of lists to choose from.
I do think these lists tend to be a little bit more successful than that. However, it is generally like, it's a list of the artists who everyone knows who've got a big marketing budget behind them.
So the first two we're going to talk about, Sound of 2016, which is how you actually build this at the start of the podcast. So we should perhaps talk about that one first, but also Brit's Critics' Choice. And I suppose the thing to say about these two sets of lists is if you listen to this podcast think, that's a rubbish list. What idiots are helping choose these lists? Well, Andy Malt, you're one of the idiots who votes for both Brit's Critics' Choice and Sound 2016. I mean, a lot of journalists and sort of bookers and programmers do. So it's not all your fault. We're not going to blame it entirely on you.
One of my choices appears on the Sound of 2016 list.
So it's good to know that you...
However, Jack Garrett basically appears on all of these lists, and I might have tipped him if I hadn't forgotten that he... hasn't already been successful.
Okay. Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? When you get people approach you in November and say, who are you tipping in 2016? But then there are some artists who were like buzzy in September, but only buzzy in the circle of about 17 people in Shoreditch. But then in your mind, it's like, oh, well, surely.
That's been and gone.
Yeah. Album came out, surely. That's all happened.
Well, not album came out because that's.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But you tend to think, because of all that buzz, it's like, all that chatter about that artist, something must have happened. Oh, they probably brought an album out. And it turns out they've had one track and they played one gig.
Also, it's been quite an eventful year for me. So actually the first 4 months of this year feel like a very, very long time ago. And I've going back and looking at artists who I'm going to do our artists of the year in a couple of weeks. And going back
Another list.
But going back and looking at who's brought out good albums this year. And loads of them I was looking back. Thinking that came out this year, I sort of thought that came out 2 years ago. So actually, when I saw the Sound Of list and the British Critics' Choice list come out with Jack Garrett on them, I was like, surely we all tipped him last year, but apparently not.
Now, obviously, we said at the start that we're on a deadline with this podcast, and we don't want it to be another 8-hour epic. So let's not bother reading out all of these lists. They're on the website if you want to read them, or just Google them. Everybody's been reporting about the Sound Of list. Which was the one that you tipped?
Western.
Western.
Who we've discussed on the podcast before.
So
top tip from me.
And then obviously Jack Garrett was the overall winner.
Alessia Carr, actually, I don't think I tipped her, but she is previously approved.
So there you go. Sound Off 2016, long list is out. How they usually do it, I've not checked this is how they're going to do it, but usually in the first week of January, they then reveal the top five, don't they? One a day.
One a day, yeah, with the final winner on a Friday.
Brit's Critics' Choice, they announced the top three earlier this month. You might have thought, okay, top three out, presumably we'll find out who the winner is at the Brit Awards. But then within 48 hours, they told you the winner
they
is.
They didn't give the runners-up very long to kind of bask in that glory. Because, yeah, like you say, about 2 days later, they went, yeah, Jack Garrett won it.
So
we'll give him a prize at the Brits nominations show.
Which is actually how they've always
done
it.
But it does feel a bit like, oh, you've won a Brit Award. You can't have it at the ceremony.
Yeah, you're not coming. We're not letting you into the O2 for the proper thing. Just have it at the crappy nominations thing on ITV2 with Fern Cotton. Probably not with Fern Cotton anymore.
But Izzy Bizu and Francis, both of whom also appear on the Sound Of list and other lists too. Francis actually appears on all four of the lists we're talking about.
Wow, so very, very buzzy. So in addition to the Critics' Choice and the Sound Of, both of which we can hold Andy personally responsible for, both Spotify and Google have also got into the list action, putting out their tipped lists for 2016. This hasn't involved you. Having said that, they do use analytics. Spotify look at what's been listened to. They said that they particularly look at what musically influential users of Spotify have been listening. I don't know if you would come under that category.
Oh, that's definitely me, yeah.
So this is your fault too. And also Google, again, both Spotify and Google, Google especially seem to be saying some of it is analytics. I don't know whether that's YouTube analytics or Google search analytics.
Well, it's the Google Play Music tip. So it'll be the four people who use Google Play Music. It's what they've been listening to.
So of the four people who listen to Google Play streaming service, let's just remind everybody, Google Play is not just an app store. It has a streaming service. I always feel it's worth reminding people
about. And a download store.
So of the four people using Google Play Music, they've picked the musically influential one.
And then they fleshed it out by asking some people, and I think looking at other lists.
So basically doing some of the same stuff that the BBC do with the Sound Of.
So yeah,
are there any interesting artists on either of their lists?
Well, on the Google list, as I say, they've got Francis and Jack Garrett on there still. Kaliuchis, she was approved earlier in the year. Aurora, just on the John Lewis advert, so it seems like a fairly safe bet. Well, that said, I'm not sure if other artists who've done that. I'm not sure it's like the Levi's adverts of the 90s. I'm not sure the artists necessarily do massively well. But then there are some less familiar names down there. Vant, Sam Henshaw, Anne-Marie.
And on Spotify's list, the Spotify Spotlight on 2016, UK. Well,
yes, because Spotify actually publish lists for basically every country that they're active in. But in the UK, again, Jack Garrett, Francis. Who else is on here? Muramasa, probably worth mentioning, because, I mean, they're doing very well already. I think they're a pretty safe bet. Mabel, who's been very talked up, Swedish singer-songwriter. Hon on there, who Atlantic are really trying very hard to make happen, and I hope they don't, because I don't like them.
So that's your hoping not. That would be a better list, wouldn't it? Well, that's what we should do next
Hotly
year.
Hotly tipped artists we hope don't become successful.
The old, my God, please don't let these artists be successful next year. That's what we're going to do. I promise you, for 2016, for 2017, we'll have the CMU Most Not Wanting to Succeed list. That's something to look forward to. Talking of new artists, a quick plug, as the podcast is running out of time, but Great Escape announcements this week. So Great Escape 2016 next May in Brighton. We will be back at CMU Insights. We revealed our strand topics this week. So if you go to CMUinsightsWebsite.com, you will find
or
the information.
CMUinsights.com.
Yeah, all that.
The actual URL.
Then you can, well, I might have to register now. What did I say? CMUinsights on the website.com. I'll register that before the podcast goes out. You'll find what we're doing, but also 50 of the artists who are playing have already been announced. And quite a few of the acts on this year's Sound of 2016 list played The Great Escape in May, so which basically means if you want a seven-month heads-up on what people will be tipping in a year's time, then you have to come to Brighton for The Great Escape. So go to The Great Escape website and book your tickets. You can still get them at the early bird rate, but who knows for how long. Those will suddenly disappear at some point. Here ends my little plug for The Great Escape. I'm quite excited that it seems mad we're already in Great Escape planning mode, but we are. And
yeah,
it will be.
There's no way of stopping it now.
Before you know it. So, yeah, that's it. This is the end of the podcast. You should do that stuff that you do at the end of the podcast.
Okay. Well, who's your big tip for 2016? Why don't you let us know at CMU on Twitter? Or, actually, no, don't bother. I don't care.
We're not interested.
I really don't care. Just go on iTunes and spend 2 seconds rating this podcast 5 stars because I was just so nice to you.
And in the comments, you should put, this is my tip for 2016.
Yeah, you could put your tip for 2016 in a review. I mean, it would seem...
No, I meant tip us for 2016.
Oh, tip us for 2016.
Say, this is the year where the CMU podcast becomes the global machine that it deserves to be. That's what you should put in your review when you're rating us.
Yeah. So what, loads of reviews that say those exact words.
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay. But yeah, if you don't have time, just hit the rate button. That's really quick. You don't even have to think. You can just five. I'll tell you, 5 stars. It's just really easy. Really easy. Just go and do it now. I would. I'll just finish by letting you know that this podcast, what you're just about to rate 5 stars, was presented by me, Andy Moore, and Chris Cook. It was produced by Matt Peaty. And for more on CMU, you should go to CompleteMusicUpdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an Unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.
Well, that went well.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.